Gary Matthews joins us on Sports Byline. If you're looking for a good baseball book, especially if you happen to be a Phillies fan, you may want to check this one out. It's called Few and Chosen, Defining Phillies Greatness Across the Eras. And Gary, of course, National League Rookie of the Year, 16 years in the majors with the Giants, Braves, Phillies, Cubs, and the Mariners. You know, Gary, when you play double-digit years in any sport, I'm always impressed with the athlete. When you reflect back on having played 16 years, what is it that stands out to you about being able to do so?
Well, really, basically, I think for me, growing up in the San Francisco Giants organization and not really just learning how to play, but realizing that the pride that it took, and it was more than just Willie Mays or McCovey hitting a home run. It was you played unselfishly and you did things in order to try and make your club win. And those are valuable lessons that you grow up with that you literally just never forget.
You know, one of the things that I thought of is that you grew up in an era. Now, you broke in with the Giants 72. You broke in with one organization, and usually when an athlete, a player, breaks in with an organization, he learns the organizational's baseball ways. Does that still exist today in baseball in your mind?
I think so, and I think one of the reasons why it's so difficult for players, once they get to the major leagues and they're there 3 or 4 years, to actually leave that club or think about it, because you've grown up in that house, so to speak, and it's a big part of you. After, however, you've done it the first time, it becomes very easy the next time. It's only a few players, however, that get a chance to play with one organization their whole career. And when you do that, you got to feel you're really blessed because, you know, there are a lot of great players, and in the end, they're traded away or for whatever reason, they're just not welcome.
In reflection, what did you see as the discernible difference between the Giants organization, the Braves organization, the Phillies, the Cubs, the Mariners as you moved through your career?
Well, that's a great question. If you can remember back then in 72, it was simple. They a lot of deals that were being made by Charlie Fox and you know, management, Horace Stoneham back then, those deals were kind of made, you know, in the back room with, you know, a few shots of bourbon and so on. This general manager promising this and that. And I think more of today, it's done more, well, a little bit more sophistication, if you will, with computers and so on. As far as in the organization, Philadelphia, without a doubt, is a first-class organization. Back when I played with the Giants, they were basically the same way, meaning staying at all the great hotels as such and just treating players in a way where other players wanted to come there. Early stages for the Atlanta Braves, not many people were there at the ballpark. That's when the days of Chief Nakahoma was there. And basically, the only one in that ballpark then, and that was the early stages. And for me, Seattle in the end, which is a gorgeous city, that's when it all ended back there. So a little bittersweet, but I had a great time, though, to say the least.
Do veteran players still mentor the youngsters as much as they did when you started into baseball? Because
that fraternity is definitely strong in terms of that. And whether or not you're with a club or you get traded, you're welcome in that fraternity as if you had been there forever.
And also, what about the minor leagues? How are they being used today? Because when you broke in the minor leagues, they did not have big bonuses being paid, a couple of $1 million. You weren't rushed to the big leagues. Joe Morgan and I were talking about the fundamentals of baseball one night, and he said to me that the kids are not taught the fundamentals because they're rushed right along because they've got an investment of a couple of $1 million in a kid now.
Very good point. Which has a lot to do with guys even learning how to hit, because there's a certain amount of at-bats I think you need to have in the minor leagues. Obviously, there's exception to the rules of guys coming up and being able to fit right in. The Bob Horner did that, Dave Winfield right off of college. But when you're speaking to most of the guys, they need to have a certain amount of at-bats, and you would think almost close to 700-800 or so in the minor leagues before, you know, you're able to come up and be a major league player.
You were hitting a coach with a couple of ball clubs, and I just wonder, as you look at today's hitter and the way they prepare for a game and just being able to be coached, how has that changed over the years?
Well, certain guys listen and certain guys don't. Very simple. I mean, the club that I had in Toronto, those 2 years, you know, looking back on there, I want to say we hit like 280, 279 as a team coming from like 229, 230. Well, to get the team to hit that as a team, you can see the significance difference in being able to have a team like that. Now, when you look at the Milwaukee Brewers and going over there, the reputation of striking out, I didn't change that very much. And as a matter of fact, when I was going to get the job, take it over from Rod Carew, I told them, you are not getting an upgrade here, because I learned from Rod. And they thought, well, maybe a different voice. But Rod, one of the best accomplished hitters that ever played the game, and also in terms of teaching. You know, you just got to have the pupil there that is able to learn and has the aptitude to be able to sustain it and then to put it on the field.
I'm going to make an observation, and if I'm wrong about this, Gary, please feel free to correct me, but you're really, in essence, dealing with two types of athletes, are you not? The kid that gets drafted out of high school who doesn't have that maturity yet, even in low minor league baseball, and then you've got the kid that gets drafted after this junior year in college that's been playing with the metal bats. I'm just wondering about the difference in those two groups of athletes as far as hitters.
Well, the high school kid can be almost as strong. It depends on the body as a kid coming from junior college. Obviously, for me, the kid from junior college would have a little bit more experience. You know, in terms of power, that's always God-given talent. And, you know, when you look at a Bryce Harper, 19 years old, keep in mind, who is what we would call back in the day not only a bonus baby, but a can't miss. He's living up to that for sure. But always run on the individual player from hitting and what teachers he's been around throughout his little amateur life and coming up. The better the teacher, the easier it is to hit. But most of all, God-given talent, you're good to go.
Yeah, does it give you a false sense of security if you've been playing with a metal bat, like, say, in college, had that 3 years of extra experience? And is it hard to evaluate a hitter because of the fact that they've been using those metal bats, Gary?
I think with some, but in the most case, a kid that would have bat speed would have it with a wooden bat and also aluminum bat. If he's dragging his bat through with the aluminum bat, you bet. He'll do the same thing once he gets to a higher level in professional ball. So, you know, it's not all that much different as far as, you know, these college kids coming up. The main thing is that bat speed. If they have that, and most of the scouts, you know, can tell about that, makes it easy for those kind of guys there to get involved.
Do I assume correctly that the greatest asset that any hitter can have is discipline?
Discipline, bat speed. You know, you can have bat speed, say, for instance, like a Bobby Bonds, and still be good. He mentally just couldn't hit the curveball. So, sure, you want to be strong mentally, but for me, you want to have bat speed. And the guys that are in the major leagues, when you look around at where they've come from, usually, whether or not they're pitchers or everyday players, they've been pretty successful in all the amateur leagues that they were in, meaning that they're not surprised that they're doing well or that they made the All-Star team, because they've done it on every level, from Little League all the way up. You know, so there's some kids that are just destined to be good major league players or basketball, football, etc.
Well, the reason why I mentioned that is Tony Gwynn one time told me that the biggest mistake that most hitters make, whether they be a veteran or young, is that they try to do something with the ball that they can't do. In other words, if the ball's on the far side of the plate, don't try to pull the darn thing. And so that's what I meant by discipline.
Yeah, I don't think, for me, most hitters these days know exactly what they're trying to do up at the plate. I say that because I see a lot of guys in hitting counts that you'd be looking for a certain pitch, maybe in an area. More than not, they'll swing at pitches and even soft pitches that are nowhere near the area. The athlete of today might be stronger, but certainly in thinking, I just don't think so. Most of the guys, I mean, are great athletes. And the guys that get it, you know, like Kemp, guys like Braun, guys like Hamilton, those are the guys that really excel. You know, some of the other guys, sure, they have all the tools, but no toolbox, meaning that they just aren't mentally strong there at the plate. And it's certainly situations where you should be looking for a certain pitch. Outfielders shouldn't be diving for a particular ball, diving. Scoreboard dictates what you're trying to do, I would think, from just about the first inning on.
With a couple minutes that we have left, let's talk about this fine book, Few and Chosen, Defining Philly's Greatness Across the Eras. Tell everybody about this book, Gary. I love it.
Well, basically, somewhat a history of the Philadelphia Phillies, categorizing each position from 1 to 5 and telling why they were in that position 1, 2, 3. A lot of the people thought maybe I should have had Grover Alexander as the number one. And if you look at his stats, you almost couldn't debate it. But the number one pitcher, right-hander, I left for Robin Roberts. And third on that list was Jim Bunning, along with Roy Halladay, fourth, and Curt Schilling, fifth. You know, and doing the book, too, you can't have any kind of, like, jealousies. You know, you gotta put them where you think. The most difficult guy, I think, was Richie Allen. Not that he wouldn't make the team, but what position would you put him at? First base, left field, third base. I put him, I think, at third base. I thought I might give myself a better chance to make the position in left field, but that didn't happen, and leaving myself off almost really on purpose, just because I didn't want to have to go through that debate. But we went through the whole organization and even managers, which I think Charlie Manuel, I made him the number one manager of all time, and there were some guys that I left off that might have been popular, like Jim Fregosi, say, for instance. So it's up for debate, and it's pretty good reading, and it goes back in the history and touches on a lot of different players.
Yeah, the top five at third base, easy number one, Mike Schmidt, followed by Dick Allen, Scott Rowland, Willie Jones, and Pinky Whitney. What was the hardest position to pick your top five for?
Oh, easily, second base. After Chase Utley, the other guys from Cookie Rojas, Manny Trio, who's a good friend, Tony Taylor, all those guys had stats that were really kind of similar. So, again, Tony Taylor being a fan favorite, playing a long time, and obviously Manny Trio, too. That was probably more difficult than all the other positions to be able to do.
We've got about 30 seconds left. How about pitchers? Tell me your top five there.
Well, the pitchers, well, simply on the right-handed side was easy. Grover Alexander, Robin Roberts, Jim Bunning, who are all Hall of Fame players, and along with Roy Halladay and Curt Schilling. Now, left-handed, obviously, you got to have Steve Carlton that tops the list. And I think just because of the young fans that we have, I believe I have Cole Hamels on that list, along with Chris Short. And Hamels, I mean, for me, this guy here is just
yeah,
one
I know.
Of the best pitchers for sure that Phillies will have.
I know what you mean. I got to run, Gary. Thanks a lot. Take care.
All righty. Okay. All right, Ron. Bye-bye.
Gary Matthews with us. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.